Morning and welcome to Shattering Myths. I am Yada. Each weekday here on GCN, we strive to expose the destructive myths associated with religion and with politics, with patriotism in the media, and with military and economic schemes. Instead of merely presenting the news, our mission is to understand what is actually occurring while discussing how these events will shape our world. Then during our second hour, we will engage God on His terms through evidence and reason, since His is the lone reliable voice in an exceedingly troubled world. Our phone number for those who would like to participate in this discussion is toll-free, 877-300-7645. We're told over the weekend that two rockets hit a Shiite Muslim district in Beirut, driving home the risk of spillover from the Syrian civil war. It is misleading to some degree to refer to the Syrian conflict as a civil war. It is far more accurate to call it a proxy war. You know, a proxy war would be what the United States fought directly with Russia indirectly in Vietnam. That wasn't a civil war, it was a proxy war. The United States wanted to confront Russia. And so we sent our troops in to battle a Russian-armed adversary. So it wasn't a civil war, it was a proxy war. Afghanistan, not the current war in Afghanistan, but the one that preceded it, where the United States empowered the Taliban, that was a proxy war where Russia fought directly against stooges that were deployed by the United States. A proxy war, again, to test the capabilities, if you will, and to rein in the influence of a foe. In the case of Syria, it is a proxy war. In this case, the United States' invasion of Iraq led to this conflict because at the time, Saddam Hussein was the enemy of Iran. But when the United States invaded Iraq and deposed Saddam Hussein and then installed one person, one vote, because I guess the United States can't count. You know, outcome-based math has had its toll. It's taken its toll on Americans. We didn't figure out that, wait a minute, 60-some-odd percent of these people are Shiites, and the Shiite religious authorities are from Tehran. They're going to vote an Iranian government. And they did. And so Iraq became Iran West. Rather than Iraq coming in Iran's enemy, Iraq became not just Iran's ally, but an extension of Iran. And so with that added power, Syria, which through Ba'athist Party loyalties had been a client of Iraq and mostly secular, is now a wholly owned and controlled client of Iran. And so with that, we also find Iran then becoming the principal sponsor of Hamas and the controlling influence in Lebanon. So the result was that the United States tipped the balance of power in the Islamic world in favor of Iran and in favor of Shia Islam. Well, the Saudis didn't like that very much. The Qataris didn't like that very much. And since the Qataris and the Saudis are filthy rich and have used their ill-gotten gain to buy American weapons by the tens of billions, they decided they would fight a proxy war, not unlike what the United States and Russia did in Vietnam and in Afghanistan. And so they armed, the United States did as well, armed the Sunnis so that they could throttle the Shias, a proxy war. And that proxy war, of course, now is spilling over into Lebanon because Lebanon is a safe haven for Hezbollah that exists as a militia of the Iranian government, principally to control Syria, to control Lebanon, and also to attack Israel. And at this point now, the Sunnis are seeing the Shias in Lebanon as fair game. It is also interesting that Hezbollah, moments before the rockets hit them, were bragging that they would keep on fighting on the side of the Assad Syrian government until they achieved victory. Moments later, rockets rained down upon them. Reuters brings us this next story. That is a story that we've reported on in the past. Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel was at West Point for their graduation, and he called the sexual assaults that are being manifest throughout the U.S. military. It is the perhaps the worst place on earth to be a woman, is associated with the U.S. military. I say that with some reservation, because we know that following America's invasion of Afghanistan, where women were treated like dogs by the, I can't even say by dogs, because we treat dogs far better than the fundamentalist Muslims of the Taliban treated women. But nonetheless, the treatment of women since the U.S. invasion of Afghanistan has plummeted. They are treated far worse now than they were treated during the Taliban's rule. And so it's hard to say that the U.S. military is the least safe place for women, but the numbers are such that the last time we did this story, based upon the most recent data, about 80% of women serving in some capacity in the military have been sexually assaulted, and that women are in the range of about 10 times more likely to be sexually assaulted in the military than they are outside of the military. And so it's an extremely dangerous place for a woman to be. And it also speaks of the uncontrolled rage, the uncontrolled libido that often manifests itself in those who choose an occupation where killing is the prime objective. Well, the fact of the matter is that since we reported this story, the conditions relative to sexual assault in the U.S. military have gotten much worse. And so while he was giving his commencement address at West Point, Hagel called the increase in sexual assaults over the last year a scourge. The most recent incident is that a West Point sergeant now stands accused of videotaping female cadets in the showers. Sexual harassment and sexual assault in the military, this is a quote, are profound betrayal, a profound betrayal, he said again, of sacred oaths and sacred trusts. Think of this. What good is a person's oath? What good is a person's trust if they betray those that they can manipulate to the degree that they are being betrayed in the U.S. military? And these are the people you are empowering with the most powerful weapons in the world, and they are showing that they are not worthy of that trust. The Pentagon is reeling from a series of sex-related scandals in recent weeks, including cases which the military advocates for victims of social assault were themselves accused of sex crimes. In a recent study released by the Defense Department just 2 weeks ago, it estimated that reports of unwedded sexual conduct in the military, from groping to rape, rose 37% in 2012 to about 26,000 cases from 19,000 the previous year. It was already astronomically high. Now, by a huge magnitude, you are more susceptible to being sexually abused in the U.S. military than you are at any time in any other place as a woman in the West. And yet the situation deteriorated by 37% last year. West Point, at West Point in New York State, Sergeant First Class Michael McClendon was charged last week with four counts, including indecent acts, dereliction of duty, and cruelty, the Army said. Here's another lack of a judgment story. All of these stories just speak of the fact that we've lost the ability to be discerning, to be moral. Reuters. The city of Detroit may be facing a deepening financial crisis, but that hasn't stopped four trustees of its public pensions funds from spending $22,000 of retirement system money to attend a conference in Hawaii this past week. Yep, you heard that right. Detroit's bankrupt. It's been taken over by the state because it's bankrupt. It's bankrupt because of the public pensions and because of the unions. That's the principal reason it's bankrupt. And yet these public pensions and their union leaders thought that it would be A-OK to dash off to Hawaii and spend $22,000 on a little vacation. The trip 4,500 miles west to a four-star resort on the world-famous Waikiki Beach in Honolulu doesn't sit well with top officials now running Detroit's finances under an emergency order from the state of Michigan. Emergency manager Orr has not ruled out a bankruptcy as the city struggles under $15 billion worth of debt burden. The city is $15 billion worth in debt, which is being strained further by its pension obligations that aren't even listed as part of that debt, even though they are obligations. Very much like the United States with its Ponzi schemes of Medicare and Social Security. Now we acknowledge that we're $17 trillion in debt as a nation, but we don't want to acknowledge the fact that because of the unfunded mandates associated with things like pensions and also Social Security and Medicare, the real number for the United States is closer to $60 trillion. But here in Detroit, $15 is what they're paying interest on in debt. But it's much worse than that because of the ongoing pension obligations. And here are these clowns going off to Hawaii. Welcome back to Shatteringness. I am your host, Yetta. So here we are with Detroit having been destroyed by union greed, by unions doing what the majority of Americans do now in their elections, which they continue to act as parasites, saying, let's continue to redistribute wealth. Let's vote ourselves a bigger slice of the pie. We'll take the earnings of others, and you just give them to us, and we'll be just fine. Well, that's what destroyed Detroit is what's destroying America. And so what do the trustees, these individuals who obviously have no sense of fair play and no morals, what do they do while their city is bankrupt? Well, they fly off to Hawaii and they spend well into the tens of thousands of dollars into just to have a good time. Well, the four trustees from Detroit were among hundreds of pension officials from around the country. When you're talking about pensions, most often you're talking about public employees. There should not be pensions for public employees. If the Social Security system is not good enough for them, too bad. And that's the first thing that I would do, not the first, but it would be among the things that we need to do as a nation, is to remove any kind of private or different retirement system from public employees, including congressmen and senators. You either go along with the same old system that everybody else has, or you get nothing. Well, anyway, the reason that they have these huge pension obligations is because politicians always want to punt the ball down the road. They want the unions to support them, so they want to give the unions what they want, which is more money. But they don't want to have the city or municipality or state bankrupt under their watch, so they postpone the cost by giving the unions pensions. This is how we got ourselves into this mess. So they all went to this conference for the, it's called the National Conference on Public Employee Retirement Systems. No? Just as I said, these pensions are for public employees. Not Social Security, not good enough. Nope, nope, nope. We're going to give you something special. We're going to pay you not only way too much to work, we're going to pay you not to work. Noling said that that Orr's team did not think that they had the power to prevent the trip. John Reel, a senior sewage plant operator and 34-year Detroit employee, is one of the four. The cost fell within the continuing education guidelines set by the legislature. He said it's one of those things we trustees must do to stay on top of the field. It's important that we participate in these conferences. The stakes are too high. He's absolutely lost whatever ability he once had to be reasonable, to be rational, to be practical, to be moral. That's the kind of person that we're dealing with in charge of public unions. It is one of many reasons there is no hope for this country. Speaking of no hope for this country, America, both on the right and the left, has gone to war against business. It is now the government's greedy manipulation of business and those who are successful against the lone outpost of productivity in this country. The only thing that powers the country, that provides anything that people actually desire, is business. Apart from business, there is nothing. And I know that sounds like that's absolute craziness, but how would you get anything? How would you fund anything if it were not for business? How would you have the local hospital? How would you pay for the local schools? How would you provide any services? How would you even fund the U.S. military? How would you fund Social Security? How would you fund Medicare? How would you do anything? How would you pave the roads? How would you put out fires without business?
I was going to say, why would your city even build infrastructure if it didn't have businesses to build for?
Correct. And to pay for it.
Yeah.
I mean, 100% of the revenue that comes into government, 100% may be a little high, but it's darn near that, comes directly or indirectly from business. The businesses hire the people whose wages are then taxed. You know, if you're taxing the wage of somebody that works for the government, all you're doing is getting back some of what you gave them that you had to take from business. Businesses pay not only corporate taxes, the highest in the world, their responsibility for all of the duties that are collected is because businesses are importing those goods. All of the fees that are paid, all directly related to business. And if it wasn't for people being employed by business, there'd be no one who would be capable of making a mortgage payment on a house and therefore paying property tax. And yet this government, as we shall see in this next article, has gone to war against business, both on the left and on the right. Obama and McCain will turn to this story when Shattering Mist returns in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Mist. I am Yada. We're talking about a story that appeared at the end of last week. Apple is being accused of being among America's largest tax avoiders. The quote is from John McCain. The reality is Apple is one of the largest taxpayers. I believe they paid somewhere in the range of $6 billion in taxes last year. And I am no friend of Apple. I own, I think, one Apple product. Besides that, I'm not an Apple fan. I don't like the attitude of the company. I don't like its marketing. I don't like its attitude. Now, that's not to say that I'm a Microsoft aficionado. I despise their attitude and marketing tactics as well. But doesn't change the fact that Apple's right here, and the senators who are attacking Apple are wrong. A Senate committee said Apple had used a complex web of offshore entities to avoid paying billions of dollars in U.S. income taxes. But it said there was no indication that the firm acted illegally. Well, if the firm didn't act illegally, why are you lambasting it? And by the way, they did not use a complex web of offshore entities. The reality is that Apple is an international company. Apple manufactures everything that they make in China. They do so because regulations and taxation in the United States have made it impossible for them to make a product that is competitive on the world markets in the United States. It cannot be done. And so they manufacture in China. At one time, GE's jet engine facility north of Cincinnati, Ohio, was the largest manufacturing plant in the world. Today, that plant is about 20% occupied, and the largest manufacturing plant in the world is 100% occupied, and it is Apple's assembly plant in China. We have done that to ourselves. The idiots that we have elected into the Congress and into the Senate and to presidents have consistently waged war against business. Now, taxing U.S. businesses at 35%, which is the highest in the world, the tax rate, confiscating whatever they earn, so disincentivizing any company that's an international company from having a headquarters in the United States, and then imposing all manner of laws on business relative to their employees, including another 7.5% burden for a FICA tax that is paid by business, taking the business taxation up well above 35% because of that tax, and then having all sorts of other regulations on business that create an anti-business climate. Virtually every leading manufacturer of goods has said that the reason that they don't open plants in the United States and improve their manufacturing facilities in the United States is that they cannot be competitive based upon the current regulations and taxation policies of this country. We have pushed manufacturing overseas, and the culprits are those who have been elected in Washington. The Senate has used a complex web of regulations and taxations to avoid employees in this country of earning billions of dollars, is what this headline should actually read. The U.S. Senate said that Apple played little or nothing on billions of dollars in profits placed in Irish subsidiaries. Well, of course they didn't. You know, they're an international company. The majority of their sales are outside of the United States. They're primarily an English-speaking country, so it would make sense that they would have a subsidiary for Europe in an English-speaking part of Europe. You know, they might speak with a little bit of an accent, but they still speak English in Ireland. And, of course, Ireland, while they pay tax in Ireland, has a lower tax rate than does the United States on corporations, but so does every country in the world. Why is Apple supposed to be different? That their sales throughout Europe shouldn't be taxed by Europe in a European country? What does the United States think, that no matter where somebody sells goods, no matter where they earn their profit, that the United States has claim to that profit? Now, the Irish Republic, home to Apple's subsidiary for Europe, says it's not to blame for the firm's low tax payments in the United States. And by the way, they weren't low tax payments in the United States. Apple was one of the largest contributors in taxation to the U.S. government. This is from the Irish Republic. They are not issues that arise from the Irish tax system, Deputy Prime Minister Eamon Gilmore told the national broadcaster RTE when asked about the Senate committee report. They are issues that arise from the taxation systems in other jurisdictions, and that is an issue to be addressed first and foremost by those other jurisdictions. What he said is true. The United States and other countries have gone to war against business, trying to steal whatever they can. Businesses can't vote. And so they're easy to attack because politicians only care about votes. And so if they're going out for a non-voting entity, stealing what they have to bribe voting entities, people, they're going to continue to do so. And they have done so. And that is what's happening here. And so the United States and other countries in Europe, the reason Europe is in a recession is they have overburdened business to the point that business can no longer pull the cart of state. They can no longer pull the freeloaders along. The company says that it is one of the largest taxpayers in the United States. Why don't they just say it is one of the largest taxpayers in the United States? Is this journalist so inept that he can't do a little bit of research? Having paid $6 billion in federal income taxes. $6 billion. Which means that the company paid another $2 billion in state of California income taxes, taking it to $8 billion. And between payroll taxes and other related taxes, it's probably in the range of $10 billion just to the United States. But in income taxes, state and federal, because they're in California, 13%, $8 billion in income taxes, federal and state. And they are the enemy. They're being slandered by the Senate. Go ahead, Scott.
Is this because they're not paying their fair share?
You know, the average American with an average income pays zip in tax. The average family in America making $50,000 to $55,000 a year pays no tax, no federal income tax. And Apple paid 30% of their income in federal tax and another 13% in state tax. They paid $8 billion. Do you think that's a fair share?
I'd say that's a pretty fair share.
I'd say that it's a little more than a fair share.
Well,
the Senate, zero would be, since Equisense, we've set the bar saying that the average American family earning an average income of about $55,000 pays nothing. That must be the fair share, right?
Well, think about it this way. You talked about Detroit earlier. Is $8 billion more than Detroit paid in taxes last year?
$8 billion is half of what Detroit's deficit as opposed to their tax revenue.
So therefore, I think that if you look at it, start looking at things that way, you're saying one company paid more than 1 million people.
That is correct. The Senate's permanent subcommittee on investigations has been examining, quote, methods employed by multinational corporations to shift profits offshore. In other words, they're going to war against corporations. They're trying to say, all right, there's a climate in America where the majority of American citizens are anti-business, anti-corporation, so let's go after and attack them. Sure, we can steal their money now, and when they collapse, when they no longer want to even have offices in the United States, that's a problem down the road for what will be anarchy here. Some large firms in the U.S. have come under fire for reluctance to repatriate their foreign earnings as they could top a tax rate of 35%. The U.S. corporate tax is one of the highest in the world. So, is there any surprise that international companies that do business around the world would headquarter in other places in the world for the sales in other countries around the world when they'll pay one-third of what they're paying in the United States in taxes? I mean, what on earth do you think would cause someone to say, you know, this government that's abusing me, this government that makes it impossible for me to manufacture my goods close at home, this government that is penalizing me in every possible way, what I think I really want to do is to pay them more money. I mean, we have morons running this country. This is a quote. What global countries are doing right now is playing one country off against another on taxes, on wages, on subsidies, said Robert Reich. Robert Reich's that little guy, looks like Napoleon, that was Clinton's labor secretary and now at the University of California at Berkeley. All they care about, and this is appropriate given that they are businesses of making money, is getting their taxes down. But that doesn't mean that we should try to buy into their sham argument, this little Napoleon, who was labor secretary under Clinton, said. Think about how disgusting that is. Businesses are in business to make product. What they care about is making a better product and encouraging people to buy a product that they're satisfied with so that they will continue to buy that company's products. That's what they care about. They care about innovation. They care about efficiency. They care about, which is to do the job more effectively. They care about the quality of their product, the quality of the customer experience with their product, so that their customers increase in number and those customers increase in favor. That's what they are driven to do, Mr. Moron. But since you never seem to understand any of that in business, about business in government, you're absolutely clueless. They're not in the business of making money. They're in the business of making products, making services, providing services that are valued by their customer. The derivative of that is making money. We'll return to Shattering Myths in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We have Nick calling in from Wisconsin, wants to talk about the fair share. Hello, Nick. How are you this morning?
Good morning. The cold is taking me down.
Yeah, I understand. Wisconsin and Minneapolis, you know, Scott, our producer, is up in your neck of the woods and Minnesota. And he, too, says it's just not pleasant outside.
Well, compared to what we had, it's much more pleasant.
Oh, yeah. I remember the days I was out here and you know, it was sun shining and 70 degrees and it was like 20 degrees below zero and sleeting.
I had snow in May, like a big, huge storm.
Yes.
Almost killed my wife, too. The tree branch fell right on.
Oh, ouch.
I never seen her move so fast. She,
oh.
Next to me when the crunch.
Oh, I'm so glad that she didn't get hurt. That is tragic. I have spent a lot of time in Wisconsin. There's a lot of things to like about Wisconsin. The weather is not one of them.
I'm telling you, one thing we're all waiting here is the global warming.
Yeah, you know, the only problem with global warming, Nick, is it doesn't exist. You know, I think it probably does exist on a really macro level because during the 1400s, 1500s, 1600s, we were in a mini ice age, and so we're trying to come out of that. And of course, 10,000 years ago, we were in a massive ice age, and we're still coming out of that. But for the last 15 years, the Earth's temperature hasn't raised; it hasn't gone up even a tenth of a degree. So, it doesn't appear like we have global warming. We do have climate change, however, and maybe they'll get a little climate change there in Wisconsin.
Mm. So about the fair share.
Yes.
I'm thinking about going out to eat with my wife and my family, and taxpayer will be the one who pay for it. How's that? Huh?
Sounds fair. Why not?
Yeah.
Why not? Why not? Why not shift everything?
All because we have some little bitty eBay business, and we are able to deduct so much. So much, bad word.
Yeah, there you go.
I mean, we won't talk it in between each other. Yeah, it's so. I mean, of course, it's nice when the big business have to take cover the rest of the little business expense. Because I mean, isn't it nice? I'll go out right now to go eat, and taxpayers will be the one who'll be paying for it.
You know, and those guys in Detroit went out, and the taxpayer is paying for their foray, $22,000 in Hawaii. But you know, the interesting thing is that if you are a business. Let's say that I'm in big business, ABC Big Business, and I want my employees to be able to go to Hawaii for a foray. We're gonna have a couple of meetings so that it's a business expense The federal government won't allow you to deduct that as a business expense anymore. And should employees go? Let's say it's a reward for the highest performance in sales for employees. They have to pay tax on the entire benefit. And so the government has made it impossible for large business to do what small business can do in terms of you can say, you know, you and your wife are the managers of your eBay business. So if you go out and have a meeting at a meal, that meal can be tax deductible. Try to do that in a large business where
our choice, we can go to Red Lobster or whatever the else we choose to.
Yes.
It's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's we just in this country have taxed ourselves into oblivion. Now, we haven't taxed the average American. The average American's not taxed. And so they make no contribution, and so they see no reason to change the system. But with during the break, Scott and I were talking about business as wholes. If you're a businessman and you before you even invest in your own business, the money that you retained, you have already paid tax on. So it's only the residue of what hasn't been taxed. You invest that money in your business, and then when that business, should it be profitable, you take that out of that business. You're taxed on that money again. And while you're paying taxes to the government on that business, which is, by the way, taxation without representation, because businesses can't vote.
I hate doing it, but my wife is here and she's yelling at me. I have to go. You know.
Okay. Well, Nick,
I'll listen to your podcast. So.
Okay. Well, thank you, Nick, for calling in. So then you've got this business paying tax as they go on, which was started with the residue of monies that had already been taxed, and if that business then pays its shareholders a dividend, that money which has already been taxed by the businesses and the residue of that tax is taxed all over again. We've just taxed ourselves to death.